Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the AI Boardroom. And today we have a really special expert, Svetlana.
You're
the expert, actually.
Tell
the people about what we're doing.
Yeah, I think what we wanted to dive in, just to give you guys a little glimpse as to what AI strategy is and how to implement it, what it means to actually bring solutions to kind of fruition, right, in your enterprise. So Edgar's going to do some talking. We'll kind of do a little bit of talking. But the idea, and again, it's a limited amount of time, so we are going to scratch the surface. And if there's any particular parts that you want to dive deeper on, we're happy to do a separate episode. And I think if you're staying until the end, there's a little bit of a surprise that I think Edgar is going to offer. So I hope you guys stay till the end to find out what it is.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, Svetlana, why are you an expert in strategy? Tell people a bit about your background.
Yeah, so I've been in working in digital for over a decade. So building products, you know, supporting strategic initiatives across different organizations. And it's always been kind of in the innovation front. So the types of products or projects I've been leading have been at new portfolio levels or new initiatives that, you know, the organization was either trialing. There's not a lot of kind of research or maturity in that space. So I was kind of initially recruited as one of the first to kind of lead those efforts. And that hasn't changed even when I entered healthcare. So I do have a full-time job where I continue to lead these innovative efforts and the type of projects that I continue to work on and create strategies. Whether it's at the portfolio level or at the individual product level, they tend to be very new. And it's exciting to me because it's things that create new business value. It's the things that drive additional revenue or drive additional value to the organization in net new ways. And I know that there's a lot of talk, and you know, we spoke with Edgar quite a lot about, even in our past episodes on the news covering you know, the problems with cheat sheets and, you know, rolling out and talking about prompt guides and all kinds of things. Yes, they streamline operations, but they're not creating that new value for your business. And so I think that's what I do. And I, you know, have an understanding of the business. You know, I'm a trained MBA. I went to a top 15 school for my MBA. Paid a lot of money for my degree, as we kind of discussed with Edgar. And I'm trained in also workshops for opportunity mapping within, you know, specifically in the AI space. I have been a practitioner in developing AI solutions for healthcare. And then I've been working with other companies to help ideate solutions within their business, how to bring those and scale solutions across different industries, construction, finance, really, I mean, healthcare is not limiting. I think it's this innovative aspect of it that excites me most, is like, how do you bring more and new value to the organization? And how do you have the strategic vision into the future? Because AI, to be frank, it does take a little bit of time to mature and to actually get value once the solution matures and scales. So how do you have that forward thinking to bring those that new net new value to your organization? And
what is the interpretation of new value and more value? Like, is like more value, I think it's like meant to like elevate existing stuff, and new value would be going new path, or how would we understand that?
Yeah, there's a few ways that you could define new value. So one is, let's say you do have legacy products. And for example, they have been built traditionally and they haven't been improved over a long time just because of technology was the limiting factor. And so you can create new value by improving or rethinking that whole workflow with, for example, AI. So AI kind of opens up a new world of possibilities, new world of efficiencies. And so sometimes it's time to create or rethink that whole architecture. And again, I have experience rebuilding tools that were built in kind of legacy via legacy software, and that you're rethinking it completely with AI using data and things that people were kind of seeing as like impossible before And they were doing, you know, parts of that solution, providing value to different parts of the organization. Now it's possible to create more new value for those legacy, like what used to be legacy products, but now AI can take that to a whole net new scale and provide that value to the rest of the organization that wasn't possible before. You can also create new value in, you know, thinking about possibilities that, you know, you just didn't think could be done before, right? So when you create new value, and these are also some of the projects I'm very excited about doing, is looking at white space opportunities. So white space opportunities basically means that there's maybe has been some research ideation happening, but there's not solutions in the space that have tackled or successfully approached that solution. So you create, and it requires some level of strategic thinking in order to find solutions for those spaces, because if it was easy, people would have been figured it out, and it would not be a white space opportunity. But you know, you can create new value where no solutions exist, and they're now made possible with AI. And they do tend to be a little bit more complex, complicated, and require a little bit more thinking and maybe potentially budget. So the types of solutions that are released in that space tend to be like larger organizations and enterprises. But that's really, you know, a huge competitive moat for the organization when you're putting your data to use in more unique and innovative ways, because that's IP that you could potentially sell too. So again, those types of solutions and products really excite me, because again, the potential is limitless.
Interesting. And so you said you like do it for a long time. I think it wasn't always AI involved back in the days. What makes AI special, like, or AI projects in specific?
So traditional products, digital products, go through a maturity cycle. So just think about not even digital, but, you know, flash disks, right? So flash drives, you barely, you know, see those around anymore, right? Because they do follow this kind of, you know, bell curve type of a maturity. You know, they raise to the top, and then they reach the peak of like the highest demand, and then they decline in demand, just because there's not much revamp that is happening and not much improvement that you can do beyond what that product can actually handle. And that's true of digital products. You know, Google is, you could even argue, is going through that phase right now, where, you know, they've improved it and optimized it to a certain phase, and now a new emerging solution came in, which is doing, you know, solutioning for that space in a completely different way, and it's being disrupted. So you can also position it as kind of going on down the decline. For AI products, what's great about those solutions is that user feedback kind of drives the improvement. So they call this the flywheel effect. So as you're putting in more data, you know, you're providing a better user experience, better recommendations. So think Netflix. And why people continue to come back to it is because of those like really, you know, attention grabbing headlines or attention grabbing thumbnails. People want to see more because Netflix gets me. Netflix understands what I want. And because users experience such a great user experience, they recruit more users, which drives more data, and it kind of continues going down, going up in that flywheel effect again, until that product potentially gets disrupted. But the great idea of the solution, there's really no limit for how well that system, for how much that flywheel can get better and better, because the more data, the more users. And the scalability of AI solutions is limitless. Again, it's the only limitation is the compute behind it.
But I think at some point, I think improvements get so marginal.
Yes.
that you kind of, you might be limitless in theory, but like the improvements are at some point mitigating, or like so small that they are not really benefiting the whole process anymore.
But if you think about also the scale, so when the traditional products kind of provide a generic experience, right? So you can't do the same level of personalization that you can with these AI systems. So I would argue that the improvements are done at a user level, right? So like you can get that experience fine-tuned to that exact user over time, and our preferences change, right? So, and then the beauty of it is that the systems are reactive, and then they're going to adapt to those changes as the user adapts in their kind of cycle. So that's another difference, is that AI can handle, yes, more data, more users and things like that. So generally the product itself will continue to improve, mm-hmm. but the level of personalization and how customized that experience for each individual user is a huge differentiating factor for what AI systems can do at that scale. Right. So you can actually personalize every experience. That's what Netflix does. Mm-hmm. Your experience would be completely different from mine, and yep. the types of thumbnails I see would be different from yours.
Yeah, I've seen an interview of the CEO of NVIDIA. He was at Stanford because I think he graduated there back in the days, and then he built NVIDIA, and up to this day he's CEO there. So and he was talking about generative AI and also like huge performance improvements that are going to come in the next like 4 or 5 to 6 years. And he was telling me like he was saying something really interesting. He said like everything we had up to this point was kind of pre-recorded, even if you like video, audios, of course, but also if you have an app, like the UX is also mm-hmm. pre-recorded, kind of, because like you put in the ways to go through the app beforehand, and they're kind of fixed. You might have branches, but they are limited, mm-hmm. and rightfully so. And in the future, we will have basically everything generated on the fly, which I found interesting.
So, I mean, the dynamic experiences, right? So like it doesn't have to be static. And I think, again, I think I don't remember what the user experience that I was seeing, but like, why not? Why not, you know, adjust the experience of the app based on what you're kind of experiencing? So maybe the future even of iPhones, like, why do you have to see a home screen full of like these busy apps? Why can't it anticipate based on your schedule or what you have going on that day, and, you know, bring on the platter to you, like, here are some options of what you can do now, and it becomes much more efficient. So maybe the future of like these operating systems becomes much more contextualized to what you have going on.
I think we are close to the first step of this. I'm pretty sure that this year's developments will make a huge step on our mobile devices to become personal assistants.
We'll see. Apple is releasing their new operating systems and maybe a new version of the OS, iOS.
The new Android is coming out. It's like right around the corner. And in June, we have the Apple Developer Conference. So, yeah, everything's close. I'm really curious what this will bring. I'm a new company. I'm an old company. That's better. I have my processes, but I'm seeing my competitors, which like we've seen in the last news episode, is 79% of managers think that they have to integrate AI to stay competitive. And I highly agree, because the efficiency gains you might or can get are so high that your value output grows really not exponentially, but at a really high rate after implementing AI. So you save costs and you can be more price competitive, or you save or you create more value and can just take higher prices, or you can just create more, handle more load to sell even more. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of opportunity in there. Someone out there will do it. So and go ahead and actually do it. But now I'm completely non-technical. I need at least to evaluate how I could use AI to elevate my business. Where do I start? What are typical use cases in businesses that might kind of be a blueprint to start from?
I would say maybe three different steps I would recommend as like starting points. One is understanding what AI can do. So I'm not talking about the history of AI or how all of these AI, ML, you know, deep learning techniques actually work. Just trying to understand at a high level, elevate yourself to understand what can AI do to be able to, again, understand like what translate that into your business? Where do those capabilities, what could you utilize across your different business functions in order to progress your business? So at that first step, you're just trying to understand the fundamentals of AI, what it can do, and to set yourself up to understand like realistically what value it can deliver into your business. And that's why I think, you know, trying to maybe partner with a mentor, you know, I do also coaching on AI, but or take some introductory courses, again, with the intent to understand what AI can do from a capability standpoint and not the technology. Mm-hmm. Two is, you know, as a, respective to your industry, because you are going to see different utilization of those capabilities across different businesses, let's say healthcare, when you do legal banking, you're going to see how some of those technologies get leveraged in completely different ways. So getting an idea for how some of these AI capabilities being leveraged across those industries. And sometimes I think it makes sense to even look at parallel industries to just get ideas for how you could even potentially create new value in your business with how maybe parallel industries are utilizing it. So first you build the foundation, foundational understanding of capabilities. You look at applications of those in the industry just to get your ideas flowing. And then you look in your own business internally as step number three. And you kind of look objectively, well, what objectives do I have set for my business? And it's not uncommon for organizations to have 1 year, 2 year, 5 year objectives to kind of understand like, how do I actually operate my business? And, you know, and what matters to my business to focus on this year? Are you talking, you know, are you focusing on minimizing customer churn? Are you looking to increase profits for this year? Mm-hmm. What are some of your high level objectives? And then you look at your either product mix or services mix, you look at your workflows, what kind of services you're providing, and you're looking to see, okay, well, based on my objectives, which one of these functions or product lines or service lines can I actually improve with AI? And then you would layer, you know, there's workshops. One of the other things that I do also is AI design thinking workshops or design sprint workshops where you kind of ideate and you align the objectives to the different products, mixes, or service lines, and the capabilities, and you ideate different use cases within that. So you're kind of coming in there with the lens of like not designing the end solution, but if I have this product, how can I boost it with AI? How can I do that work better? Or are there things that we have been thinking about doing or revamping this and it wasn't possible before? Because before AI, we just thought it was just the amount of business rules that we had to implement was just unfeasible. Can we revisit that improvement for that product? Yeah. Is there a process that's inefficient in the business that could be improved again, like in marketing and sales? Are there things that are taking like the, to get an approved marketing copy, that is it currently take a week, 2 weeks, 5 weeks? I don't know, to get from a concept into the market. Could we cut down on that time? And can we get a few more turns of that marketing, you know, ads into the market? Like you look more objectively into your business and align it to your objectives and see, okay, what are some opportunities? And what that enables you to do is to focus on not chasing the AI technology for the sake of chasing technology. Mm-hmm. You're looking more strategically at where can I invest money that matters to my business? So you make sure that that investment can actually give you a positive ROI and that you're not investing it into like just chasing a technology and saying like, hey, we actually do AI, but it's not an impactful product that's actually moving the needle on any of your strategic objectives. So you kind of have to start top down. And I think we talked about it yesterday too in our news episode where the dangers of not driving strategies top down is that sometimes employees, they, because of how much value AI has, they're going to go and hunt those solutions themselves because they want to do their job more efficiently and effectively. And I think the report that we saw from Microsoft yesterday, that 75% of people are using some AI tools to support their workflows. And at that point, it becomes really hard to measure the investment or the ROI in those initiatives. So you want to make sure that, you know, you are kind of democratizing access, but you're doing it strategically. You're investing in the right things in the business that you can measure the ROI. You can measure the investment that you've put in and how much value you're getting out. You're actually assigning metrics to that if you kind of do it in those steps.
So no, not like just handing it out and hit and hope. One thing I would love to add is if you have existing processes you try to evaluate them, like look at all the parts that are actually not creating value. Like for example, in sales, managing the contacts or putting them into the CRM or writing a protocol, stuff like that, it has value in with the information that are inside, but the process itself is just tedious. And that's something where something like a large language model with its language understanding capabilities might be a way to streamline the process. And that's just an example. So the value lies in like getting rid of the non-value creating parts of value creation.
Oh yeah,
kind of. Another thing. What you can look at if you don't want to touch your existing processes is like, what stuff did we want to do, but we weren't able to because it wasn't cost effective enough to do it. Mm-hmm. It might be like may AI help me to do it cost effectively, or at a cost rate where it actually makes now business sense where it hasn't before. So. I'm definitely looking at marketing stuff you didn't do because you didn't have the spare time or didn't have enough ROI to justify it. And now you can maybe pump up the volume, stuff like that.
And I think just to add to that, I think historically, I think natural language processing as a field or kind of a capability on its own has been historically been something that big corporations did because of compute or the technology that was required in order to develop those systems or customize them to your industry. It was just so cost prohibitive that people would not even just go there because it's like, it's for the big corporations to play around with. But now if you look at, and we talk about large language models right now, so if you think about the amount of value and the use cases that opens, like you could use this for summarization, but you can use it to curate data. You could look at using large language models for some analysis tasks and things like that. So things that you were potentially looking to leverage natural language processing for, but it was so cost prohibitive before, like you could totally revisit now because the costs of some of this compute and like utilizing these large language models in your infrastructure have gone down significantly. So for the benefit that you're gaining out of it.
Weekly, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, definitely revisit that because I think, the ROI is much easier to demonstrate now than it probably was in the past.
So you've done this for some time now. What do you have experienced, maybe as common pitfalls during AI projects or during strategizing AI projects?
There are a few, I think. Inflated expectations or unrealistic expectations of what AI can do and what time frames, because I think depending on the complexity of the projects, it does take a little bit of time to implement. There's also some experimentation that happens with AI systems, unlike, again, traditional software development techniques where everything's kind of, rule-based. You determine the rules and then the outcome is pretty certain. With AI, it really depends on the right technique to use. Sometimes, it's very unique to the use case, the industry, and things like that. So the types of techniques or models you're using. So for example, in healthcare space that, I have my full-time role, we are looking for equivalents of general models, but that are trained specifically on medical tech. So there's, again, nuances to the types of models, some experimentation, mm-hmm. that every, just the fact that you're building something means that it doesn't exist elsewhere. And that's another thing that we may need to talk about, but there's a build versus buy assessment that you have to do. So you shouldn't just build these tools because it's quite mm-hmm. expensive, but because it is new, it means
right.
that it doesn't exist elsewhere. So yeah. there's a level of experimentation that you have to do. So it's not as deterministic.
And also look in the open source space, there is a lot of movement there, a lot of things you can just integrate, fork and adapt to your use case. So that might give you a great head start. What I want also to add is you don't have to, how do I say it? Okay, we cut that.
I just want to say, one other thing that I'll just add that with AI system, because there are probabilistic systems, it's hard to predict the accuracy or the outcome, right? So it's not as like, you know, you put this in and you're going to get a deterministic output. Sometimes, you know, as you're kind of getting the systems up to a certain accuracy, you might get there with the first to 80% or 90% accuracy by third iteration, which may take a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. But even then, you're only promising 80% accuracy of the promised output. So you can't also calculate your ROI the same way you are doing it for standard processes. So the way that you could actually do it is incremental. So for every percent of improvement that you gain with each iteration, you promise an X amount of value gained. And so that way you're not anchoring yourself to 100% accuracy, which very hard to achieve with some of these AI systems.
Yeah,
if you're lucky, you will get into the 90s.
Yeah.
But you are also kind of self-proving or safeguarding yourself so that if your solution is built to 80, you demonstrate, okay, the ROI on that investment, how much you put in to get to that 80% is X. So now for every 5% improvement, we are looking to project Y, and that's what would make sense. And when you reach that time where the invested amount of money is just not worth the ROI at that point, that's when you say, like, this is probably as good as we're going to get. Yeah. And any change beyond a certain point does kind of start to level off, and the improvement tends to be very incremental. So sometimes it's just not worth putting in huge amounts of dollars into an initiative if you're only getting a small increment of value back.
And also, I would love to add, the value is not only calculated by what percentage helps me to, like, or like for every percent, this is the value add, but it's also you have to weigh against what does it mean if it's not right? Like if the answer or the outcome of your AI solution is not right, what does the consequence of it is? Like, is the consequence just I have to restart the rephrase the question? So what? Is the consequence that someone has to cancel some bookings? Might be a different beast. So that, and what I would love to add is also really think on how you sell the stuff to your people and to the people using it. Because if you sell 100% solution to them and you may not even have 70 right now, it's fatal, because people will just stop accepting it and saying, like, does work every third time and dismiss it. So you have to sell it properly to have it implemented successfully in the end.
I would say just like, or maybe to add one more that you'll probably frequently encounter, especially if you work in larger organizations or enterprises, but when you roll out the product, you have to set the expectations.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
For the product as to what you can expect as output, as far as, you know, because the output may not be perfect in every scenario. And so we preface that, and we go on road shows before we ever deploy anything organization-wide, is to educate the organization on what the solution is, how it works, and the importance of feedback. So the the solution becomes as you becomes better with them engaging with the tool, with them providing feedback and telling us what's wrong with a specific piece of output. So it comes to us. There's also a phase that we do do controlled rollouts, especially for the tools that are internally facing, where we are more proactive. And then there's different phases that we do for rollouts, but we seek that feedback more actively initially. And then once we roll out, let's say a beta, we have other more automated mechanisms like implicit feedback or explicit feedback that we collect additional data points to improve the product. And then we proactively seek so that when we roll it out into the practice, for example, or into the enterprise, people are educated as to what to expect of that product. So we don't hear, although it does come sometimes like, oh, this is really wrong or, you know, but you know, once you go back and you educate or you revisit kind of some of the things of how this product works, they actually appreciate it. But I don't want to underestimate the amount of education and change management that needs to happen to educate folks within the organization for what's different about this product and why it's not built the same way that the traditional products that they're used to.
From our talks, I remember that you also you have an emphasis on scalable solutions and that's important for you. What does this mean?
So quality, yeah, I say this a lot, but quality and scale are the two elements of AI solutions that you want to make sure you have. So it depends on the use case. So of course, if you're in a small organization, maybe scale is going to be like scaling to 5 users or maybe 10 users. But when you're talking about enterprises and scalability, what that means is, so quality ensures that you're building something and then you have a pathway to improve the solution, you know, up to 100% over time. So there's a roadmap for how you continue to improve, whether it's feedback or other means. And then the scalability aspect of it, you ensure that you're not, you know, creating a small use case for a small population that could be as good as just writing a few rules, like business rules. So sometimes if it's a use case that you invest a lot of money, but it is so small as far as impact to the organization, then it may not be worth the investment. So you want to make sure that you scale it, but you also do it in a way that you can deliver value not only to one business unit, but you do it, you know, you develop it as a platform or you get a solution to a certain part where you let other teams leverage the technology or kind of, you know, modularize, let them use the modular components of the architecture in order to customize it to their unique use cases. Mm-hmm. So it is highly emphasized and like how large organizations and enterprises actually do this and how they're able to scale, not scale, but also let organization, you know, deploy hundreds and thousands of models a year is because they're building these platforms and then each individual business unit is then customizing to their needs. But then also, you know, I have experienced use cases where it is, you know, supporting a specific workflow, but historically because of rule-based solutions that were kind of tried in the past, they were only able to support a few use cases, right? So like for this situation, this is how you use it. So it's how do you actually do it, you know, challenge the system to do these things, but then 100 other things, right? So how do you actually create this engine to take the data and let the data do the hard work to provide recommendations for not just you, this use case, but then how do you actually create this model? And it's really challenging, I'll tell you that, but we have experience doing this. But you have to make sure that it is something that the whole enterprise can take advantage of, not just a specific exclusive group that their use case is so small that, you know, it becomes a shiny object for their organization and everyone else wants it. So you need to build a path again, whether you democratize the architecture or modularize it so other teams can use it, or you build the solution itself in a scalable way so that the whole enterprise can take advantage of that use case. Again, it's a case by case basis, but there's two different ways to think about it.
Interesting. Like every project has to be done by people. How do you, like, what is the team one would need if he would love to do it internally? Like, for example, I have my own IT department and I have my own people, and they have to do the project. What are they like? I think you have internal teams and like augmented with some external contractors, right?
Yeah, so I would look internally first to see what skill sets exist. So not every IT team has a data science function or data analytics that have the right skill set to work on AI solutions. So I would evaluate your internal team and structure and skill sets to see if you even have the right skill sets to deploy AI solutions. So people who have ML ops or, you know, just, you know, working on ML solutions, data scientists, data engineers, do you have those skill sets and are they appropriate for the project? If you do, I would also, you know, the technical piece of it is just one part of the story. You do have to have a business representation, right? Someone that drives the vision of that product, of that function, some, the metric KPIs for what, if this product is developed or this initiative is developed, what's considered a success? You also need some, I want to say leadership champions, someone who really believes in the effort and can champion this across the organization and has influence across the organization. So this does not become like the silo effort of someone experimenting with AI and the rest of the organization is not aligned, right? And they're just kind of independently working on this own and they don't have a voice to like really get the organization excited about this effort, then it could quickly get shut down as an experiment and like something gets swept under the rug that no one cares about. So you do want to make sure that you structure this team, someone that's, again, a strong leader. You know, you need the product manager, you know, some leadership representation in this, and you do need to have a technical team in order to kind of implement it and see it through, you know, proof of concept, beta, deployment, and like operationalizing the tool and whatever else have you. But I think that the key here is that, you know, not everyone is very fit for innovative stuff. So there are going to be things, especially with the use cases of automation. I haven't experienced this, but I have recently read a book about a specific use case where, you know, this business leader was trying to deploy an automation tool or automating certain aspects of the process. And, you know, she was delegating, I want to say like process mapping to the target team. So basically the SMEs on the ground. And what might actually happen is people like, and what actually happened in that use case, people started ghosting that effort. So people just started taking vacations unplanned, calling out sick, and just like not documenting. So a month went by and there's not much movement that happened. So again, it takes a certain level of leadership, then also stamina and the mindset also to like lead the initiative, but also the teams you surround yourself with kind of have to be in that same mindset of like innovation and not be stagnant to their old ways, reserving to their old ways of traditional kind of problem thinking. And then there's some telltale signs for when things are not going in the right direction. And you can tell again by the velocity of the team, where the initiative is going, how long it's taking. Yeah, and I have my own kind of targets for how long things like a proof of concept should take, right? For you to even build out an initial version of the solution shouldn't take more than like 3 to 6 months, like max, even for the most complex project. You need to demonstrate value. So you don't want to invest years.
I would say 6 weeks, like.
Depends on the complexity.
Get something out, yeah.
Yeah, just get something out. And I think just prove that it works. Right. So like you just need an indication, some signal that, hey, this can actually deliver value, and then put it in front of stakeholders and say like, hey, do you want to scale this? I'm actually going through some of those initiatives right now. It's like, do you want to scale this? Do you want to staff? Do you want to see realize the full value and the full potential of this product? And that's when you make that decision and then calculate the ROI for each increment. And when does it make sense for you to improve it to in order to get the value for that product.
That's also something that's especially useful, or not only useful, but especially if you are at a point where you have an AI project, And I said it like 10 minutes ago that you have to weigh the successful implementation against the failures, or like the successful runs against the failures. That makes it even more important to get a proof of concept running, to even get the chance to evaluate like how far might we come. Like there are certain things you can do in like really like setting up such an AI solution where you know, okay, if we improve the prompt, if we improve the architecture, we can go even further, but that's a baseline we can work from. And I, for myself, built for our solution, I built the first prototype in a week or so.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
yeah, and just made like one or two things I wanted to have happen, and then I said, okay, the rest I think we can figure out. Let's go. Did it work completely as planned? No. But do we have a proper working solution now? Yes, we have.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. For that is also not bad to have someone, at least for like a short period of time, helping evaluate stuff who has actually experience in doing AI projects besides typing stuff into ChatGPT.
And I think that's a really great point. So when I say so it shouldn't take longer than 3 months, it's a red flag that when people like teams start taking longer than that. But what I was actually, because I'm doing quite a complex project right now that we're on the timeline to deliver a proof of concept in 5 weeks. And we're talking about knowledge graphs, large language models, natural language processing, and machine learning recommendation system, all orchestrated under one solution. And that's being delivered in 5 weeks. So it is possible to do it. And again, you have to have the right people actually doing this. But if it starts to become, again, it should become a red flag when things are taking longer than anticipated. And then you should really evaluate, are the right people or the right skill sets at the table kind of ideating these solutions? And if not, I think you should augment your teams with contractors or experts or people who have experience actually building these solutions, or educate teams for actually how to strategize, how to put these solutions together. So I know, Edgar, you do some of this. I do some of that as well. How do you actually build these solutions for proof of concept, but do it in a way that you could scale those solutions even further and later? So pick, you know, you don't have to boil the ocean with the initial version. So you do have to define the scope for those 5 weeks of what you're trying to show as an indication. So it can be small, but you want to make sure that that effort is not throwaway, that you can just build on it if you do get leadership buy-in to continue
scaling. I would say like a little like note to that. It can be throwaway if like you just want, if it helps you, just like if like one-way camera is good to take the shot right now to see if it works, and then go the go get the expensive camera afterwards. So it's totally fine. And for AI solutions, the prototyping doesn't have to be in the system you will implement it, like the real solution later. I for myself oftentimes just go ahead, mock some prompt with some mock data and put it into ChatGPT for just to see how AI reacts to what I want from it, or use a low code solution or something like that to just get some results, because results and evaluating results is like really key to creating successful AI solutions.
Yeah, totally agree.
Well, that would be like, that can be throwaway, but only if it really speeds up the process. Otherwise,
of course,
go ahead.
And I think, again, I'll just kind of emphasize that AI is experimental. So do even data, like the most experienced data scientists or ML engineers, go into it knowing exactly how it's going to work? Not always. So there are things that they are going to be trying, different algorithms, different approaches.
Yeah, it's always try and error. Yeah.
Exactly. So by definition, anything that they tried that didn't work is throwaway, but I'm just saying that you shouldn't just build a solution for the sake of building it, something that should be using machine learning, but you decided to just do the proof of concept with large language models, because that was just something that you could get done in like 2 weeks, but that's not the technology you end up using at scale. That's what I mean. So,
and also, I would love to add something to that. The jump from a prototype, which already gets a lot of the way, to an actual product, don't underestimate that. The jump from, from an actual usable product with all the concerns about privacy and data security and everything. like really, 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 really take into consideration that just because you have built a proof of concept in 2 weeks, the solution won't be ready in 4 weeks time. So there is a big gap from okay, barely usable to production ready. And there is also, and that was, for example, my learning, building our solution, at my company. We went ahead and I did the AI algorithm in November. And attached to the next time now in March. That's how long it took for me to get everything else ready. All the systems, all the integrations, all the UI for administrating stuff, concepts for interactions, authentication, authorization, all that stuff. That's a lot of work. that's a lot of work just for the surroundings to then give AI the proper environment to work in, which is like the most important thing, because otherwise you won't ever get a good result if you don't have the right context. And yeah, that's something I'd love to emphasize, because I know also like from my partners and for myself even, like, I thought, okay, I built this in a week, I'll be done in 2 months. No, I wasn't. I wasn't even close to being done in 2 months. So keep that in mind, the gap. And from, like, I do software now for 15 years professionally, or close to 15 years. I never had anything that was, like, so capable in its prototype phase, but took so long to bring to production ready. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think don't underestimate the security emphasis. I think I would even layer that depending on whether this is B2C, meaning that it's outward facing towards customers type of solutions, you probably want to even build in additional time to do the due diligence to make sure, especially for large language models, that it's not going to hallucinate. You put in the right guardrails in place, system prompts, and you anticipate all kinds of scenarios. So there's probably an additional level of Q&A that you want to do, like QA, I'm sorry, not Q&A, QA that you want to do with smaller groups to make sure you iron out all of those bells and whistles before you put a customer-facing product like chatbot into the market. And, you know, again, depending on the industry as well, but things that are internally facing, again, depends. Like there's potentially a different approach that you can do with change management, where you would still do your due diligence of rolling it out to a smaller set of users, but then the types of people you roll it out initially with, and then the subsequent phases, you know, there's also an approach to that. But I would also kind of add that in there as well, because again, these systems are not meant to be perfect, and you know, in order to get that, you know, last level of feedback accuracy built in is actually better driven not by fine-tuning these techniques, but it's actually through getting additional feedback. So, so it really depends, but I totally agree with you that the time from POC to a production-level product does take a little bit of time that could be disproportionate to the amount of time it took you to get to that proof of concept.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I think this was a good closing.
Should we talk about what we'd love to do maybe during the next episode, and if people want to take us up on it?
Yeah, a little surprise. I was I completely forgot about it, to be honest. But it's in the middle of the night here where I am. So have some, how do you say, pity with me? I don't know. yeah, what we love to offer you is you can hand in through the comments on YouTube or DM us on LinkedIn. Hand over some ideas, stuff that you would love to try out or love to know if it's working or not, considering an AI integration. And we would offer up maybe one time and then see how it goes, but take one of the suggested solutions or implementations and just do it live with you, just building live a PLC, which you can take with you, do what you want with it. I don't care. It's about showing how to approach that. So I'm doing that with some of my own projects live on my channel, and we would love to do it in the AI boardroom context as well. So if you have any interesting topics you wanna tackle, just approach us down in the comments or DM us.
Yeah, just let us know what maybe industry you're in and what use case or what problem are you trying to solve with AI. And then we'll be in touch with you further to kind of get your additional information, maybe documents or whatever you're hoping to achieve through this. But drop your comments below. We'll select someone from the comments. We'll be in touch and we'll be building out the solution live with you. To show you exactly how it works behind the scenes, and just kind of let Edgar's skill set shine live. So for those, hopefully we won't do it at this late hour so he doesn't fall asleep while building. But
honestly, I stream from 10 p.m. every time I stream, so it will be late at night, but it's fine.
Okay. Just make sure you drink some coffee so you don't fall asleep on us.
Yeah, I didn't have any coffee today. That's my problem at the moment, I think. Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Svetlana. That was really, really insightful. Thank you for opening up to us about all the experiences you made. And to you all, thanks for listening. Was a pleasure as always talking with Svetlana about our most favorite topics. And I hope you get the value from it. I've myself found it value packed. I think you have to listen several times to it to get everything out of it. That's what we want to deliver value till it comes out of your ears.
And the invitation still stands. So if there's anything that you guys want us to dive deeper, maybe do some diagramming live, I think we can talk and deep dive on a specific topic that you want to understand more about. So again, drop it in the comments. We read your comments. Thank you so much for again engaging with us and taking the time to listen. But I hope you guys enjoyed this, and we'll see you, I guess, on the next one.
And if you're not subscribed to the channel, please subscribe.
Oh yes.
Leave us a like. and comment down below. We are always curious to hear from you. And that said, see you.